This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit JabberjawMedia.com for more shows like this one.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/peerpleasure. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Check it out today.
Hey, this is Brock from 36 Crazy Fists, and you're listening to the Peer Pleasure Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Peer Pleasure Podcast. This is Dewey. We're glad to have you back another week. This is week 10, and we're really excited to have our guest today, Brock Lindau from 36 Crazy Fists. Now, if you haven't heard of 36 Crazy Fists, they're one of the biggest bands to come out of Alaska. We grew up somewhat together, but never really knew each other. It was kind of ironic that we both got in the same business, but had never known each other. Brock and I met eventually at the Paris Theater in Portland at one of their shows, and briefly talked about things, but they were a little older than we were and were already coming into the scene when we were first starting out. So that was kind of an interesting rise, for them, watching them as fans in Alaska, and being so close together, but never knowing each other. They lived in Anchorage and we lived in Wasilla. So that's about a 52-mile stretch there. It takes about an hour to get there, so if we went into a show in Anchorage, we had to find someone with a vehicle at that time because we were so young. I mean, not a lot of us drove, so it's few and far between. There's some really cool venues up in Alaska. One was called Gigs. It was a two-story venue. We used to play all the time, Battle of the Bands. At one point, we all worked at Little Caesars in Palmer, and we actually had to be driven there by the district manager in the pizza van and carry our gear. We used to practice in a Little Caesars. That was awesome. We used to love talking about that. We used to store our gear up on top of the walk-in freezer, cause Nick, our drummer, was the store manager. So we actually got guns drawn on us by the cops on the way out. That happened. We were loading out for a show and they thought we were robbing the place. And, so that was a pretty awesome experience as well. Anyway, so 36 Crazy Fists, doing a new record right now. Brock is currently, I believe, in Portland here. When we talked, he was still in Alaska, but came down to put vocals down on the new record. So they've got a new record coming out on Spine Farm next year. Their current album out right now is Time and Trauma. We talk a lot about that record. Talk about Marrow, one of the really popular songs off that record that was really big departure for them musically. And really took a step forward, and it's really cool. I'm going to try to play that song at the end of this episode for all you guys to hear. So another thing I wanted to talk about right quick, my buddy Matt Carter and I were talking a few weeks back when I first started the podcast, and something just really came to light that was really cool with what he said. And we were talking about numbers, downloads, and who's listening to the show, and just how unimportant that is to think about on a regular basis. I mean, you guys listening to the show is definitely important, but as a podcaster, the way he put it to me was, picture you have, you know, 1,000 people that listen to your podcast, and you're trying to get, you know, tens of thousands, millions of people listen to your podcast. But he said, just think about this. He said, walk out your back door and look out there, and you see 1,000 people just standing there saying, hey, Dewey, talk to us, man. How cool would that be when you think about it literally like that? Even 10 people, 2 people that want to hear you talk, want to hear who you're talking to, want to hear what you have to say. I mean, there's nothing cooler than that. And I'm really appreciating all the downloads. I mean, the show is doing great. Tons of downloads, tons of comments, really great feedback, specific feedback, specific questions that you want answered from a guest that didn't get answered that maybe I can answer for you. are getting asked, and that means people are really listening, and that is just one of the coolest things. And I wanted to put that out there that I really appreciate each and every one of you that are listening to this show. It's really a labor of love, and I'm really, really pleased with how it's doing. And I'm doing my best to bring you the best guests I can, people I really like and admire, some people I don't even know. But for starting out, I'm really starting to go through people that I know and want to reconnect with and have you guys listen in. So keep listening, keep downloading, keep subscribing, keep telling your friends. I've seen a lot of comments coming through of people tagging people on Facebook that should listen to this show. And that's really cool, and I really appreciate that. We are at peerpleasurepodcast.com. We are on Twitter and Instagram. We are also on Jabberjaw Media. You can listen to us on there, jabberjawmedia.com. There's some great other shows on our network, and it's a real family atmosphere. We're really enjoying being on there. So, and also, as usual, if you want to, you can email me at peerpleasurepod@gmail.com. Questions, concerns, anything like that. Love to hear from you guys and love the feedback. So keep on listening. So without further ado, let's get into it with Brock Lindau from 36 Crazy Fists. Well, welcome everybody to the Pure Pleasure Podcast. This is Dewey. I'm joined today by Brock Lindau from 36 Crazy Fists, one of the gnarliest motherfuckers to come out of Alaska for sure. One of the best voices you've heard, I'm sure. You'll never forget it once you hear it, that's for sure. But how you doing, Brock?
I'm good, man. Thank you for the nice compliments.
Dude, seriously, it's hilarious with you and I because we're both Alaskans, came up at different times. You must have been graduating high school when we were starting high school. Always knew of 36 Crazy Fists and never once made it to a show in Alaska. And never, I think the only time you and I have met was super brief at the Paris Theater in Portland. And okay. It was random. Like we had moved to Portland to start, you know, playing music more on a professional level. Touring was easier that way. And we're like, man, 36 is playing the Paris, so we got to go. And we went. It was badass. I think I went up to you at one point and was like, hey, you know, I'm from Alaska, yada, yada, yada. And
yeah.
So that was it. And that, and to this point, that's still all it was. And it was always this awareness of the band, but never, we were never really part of the Anchorage scene. We were more in the Valley. And right. And then by that point, by the time we were able to do that, you guys were already gone. So, for those of you who don't know, 36 Crazy Fists, Brock is the lead singer and from Alaska, as you heard. But so what are you guys up to right now?
Just wrapping up the writing of our new album.
Okay.
Actually, drums start tracking tomorrow, actually, in Portland. And I will be heading down to Portland right around Thanksgiving to hopefully be the final piece of the puzzle. And we'll be turning in our new album, hopefully, by the end of the year. That's kind of the deadline that we have with our label. And, yeah, that's really been it, man. Just enjoying the downtime. We were out on the last album for damn near a year and a half. So it was a pretty long touring cycle for us. And yeah, we just got home from South America about 3 weeks ago. So we went back down there, kind of as a, well, it was, we had the opportunity to go play some shows again, but it was also kind of to break up the writing process and have a little team building and, just get out and have a good time, playing live again, cause it had been a little bit. So, just really, that's it really just, living life, you know. I'm a single dad here in Anchorage. So, I have my daughter half the time, and I work radio here as well for 94.7, which is another rock station here in town. I've done that off and on for many years, and then I also have a radio show called The Beer Show, where I interview local brewers, and not just local, but craft brewery folk, and it's pretty fun. Probably not the most fun show to actually listen to, but it's a great time to be part of.
Nice. Have you thought about doing a podcast?
You know, I have, you know, obviously, you know, there's such a cool, popular thing these days, but, since I've always worked at radio, I just have always had the radio outlet and I never really ventured further than that. But, the beer show is on Podbean. So it is after the fact recorded and put up on there. So I guess for all technical purposes, we sort of have a podcast, but it's on AM and FM stations here in Anchorage as well.
Okay. Is K-Well still around up there?
Oh yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Okay. Yep.
94.7. That's the alternative station down here in Portland, I think.
Right. And it kind of was here as well. It was the same model called The End, which is what it was in Portland too. I'm not sure if it still is, but, now it's called Pure Rock 94.7. So it's a mix between current active rock and then really cool like 70s, 80s, 90s rock as well.
Nice. Okay. And you in your show, so are you just DJing or do you have an actual show on or do you do multiples, I guess?
No, I used to actually have a specialty show called Beat It Back with Brock, and that was on Saturday nights and I could play whatever I wanted. And it was a lot of fun, but it was pretty late in the evening. I believe I was on at midnight, so actually Sunday mornings. But so now I do the afternoon drive. So I'm 3 to 7 here Monday through Friday.
Nice. That sounds fun, dude. Then you got the voice for it and you got the personality. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks. Just another way, you know, to utilize my voice and hopefully make a couple bucks. You know, it's, I wasn't a rocket scientist or anything like that. So, you know, rock and roll is where I put all my, my eggs in that basket.
Yeah. You had a lot more fun though.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've had a real great career and I've been really grateful for it.
Dude, that's awesome. And the other thing with you and I, we went very different paths as far as scene you guys were a lot, you guys went with Roadrunner and took off. I mean, you guys were doing some huge shit and really encompassing that vibe of the full on rock persona on stage and the band you're touring with and the aesthetic of the band. And it was just awesome to watch. And I was wondering from then to now, I mean, are you guys, I know you're working radio, but are you guys able to survive on 36 alone or do you guys have to work at this point?
I mean, yeah, we all have side jobs. Okay. We have side jobs that allow us to be on tour for as long as we need to be because it is our main focus. And so, you know, that being said, when we're on the road, we can sustain a decent living. But when we're off the road, you know, you got to keep the money coming in to pay the bills. And it's not the cash cow that it maybe once was in the 80s and 90s, as everyone knows. So the physical sale of albums is pretty much non-existent these days. And so if you're not playing shows and selling T-shirts, you know, it's difficult. So everybody has side gigs and, you know, but like I said, you know, music is still. We're about to have our 22nd anniversary and it's still the main focus of our lives. And, that's a pretty special thing to be able to have been doing it this long and still being able to have it as a main focus, because like I said, some of us have kids and, you know, at times when you get to be, well, I'm 41 now, you know, it's hard to keep the dream alive, you know, but, I think certain ways, you have to trim the fat here and there. And we've always been, you know, a minimal overhead with our band. I mean, we don't have tons of techs. We don't have a bus. You know, we actually toured for many years in the RV, and we actually, on the last year's touring cycle, we went back to the van in the States because it's just more reliable, number one, and it's way cheaper. And, you know, we don't make, you know, a bus. We've never been in a bus in the States ever, so it's all we know in the States. And we did a lot of touring in the States actually on the last album cycle, which was sort of rare for us because we just had a lot more success outside of our country. So we tried to, you know, focus there, and you can make a lot better living over there as well. Mm-hmm. But, so we always appreciated our fans outside of the country, but we wanted to try and focus on trying to build more here. And we got some great opportunities. I mean, we had new, we kind of cleaned house on the whole last album as well. I mean, we went over to Spine Farm Universal, mm-hmm. and then we got new management, we got new booking agent. So everything was fresh, really. So it felt really good. And in turn, everything that we got last year in the U.S. was just the most, the best touring opportunities we'd ever had in the States. So, I mean, we supported Five Finger Death Punch, In This Moment, Killswitch Engage, bands that are, well, Killswitch not so much being on the radio, but Five Finger Death Punch and In This Moment, two massive active rock bands.
Yeah.
And we had never really gotten to do those kind of tours before, and I really wanted to focus on that. And, you know, the Five Finger Death Punch tour was really good for us. It was awesome, actually, you know, because we have a pretty big association with the military fan base as well. Not like they do, but it was awesome to be around that in the size that they have. But the In This Moment tour, we love those guys. I mean, shoot, they used to open for us before they were what they are now. Uh-huh. And we were really grateful to get the nod to come with them. But I really think that 40-year-old plus grain bearded men screaming at junior high girls with their parents in the front row is not probably the scene that we should be approaching ever again. So we were grateful for the tour, love uh-huh. the guys and gal in This Moment, but that was a lesson in what I was maybe a little too eager on wanting to hit that active rock crowd and realizing that there is a certain place we should be and we shouldn't be. And, you know, I guess that's the beauty of this business. You're always learning, and if you're not, then maybe you don't need to, or you're just not smart enough to figure things out.
Yeah. That's amazing, dude. That's a really weird demographic there. And I mean, you guys have spent so long.
It's killer for them, you know, because you want young fans, people to be growing up. And still, at this day and age, you want to still be reaching those people that maybe, you know, you don't think are relevant to. And that band, In This Moment, I mean, they're like they're almost like a Vegas show. You know, they have such a production on stage, and yeah. So I want to make sure I'm being kind, because they're amazing people.
Sure.
But the crowd that they attract is not interested in, like I said, 40-year-old grain bearded men yelling at them.
Man, and so you guys are on Spine Farm now. The Time of Drama came out, was it 5 years after Collisions?
Yep.
Was that your longest stretch between?
Years. It was.
Okay. And then I noticed a lot of Time and Trauma was a lot different, especially, and you've probably talked about this a million times, but that song Marrow seemed like a complete departure. But it came across really well. And I was wondering, you know, that it was just a huge step outside of where you guys were before. And is that kind of the way you guys are going now? Or are you going to kind of pepper things with songs like that going forward?
I don't know. I think that Marrow specifically was interesting because it's probably the most talked about song on the album, mm-hmm. but we never played it live, obviously. I mean, not obviously, but we never played it live. And we were supposed to do a video for it and just kind of got shelved after a while. And we never did do a video for it for whatever reasons. I think everybody just kind of, it got off everyone's radar, but, mm-hmm. It was probably a missed opportunity, because it is the most asked about, probably most of the fans' favorite song on the album, blah, blah, blah. So it was the first song written for the album, but the song was written probably 3 years before the album came out. So it's kind of an interesting thing, because when our original drummer, Thomas, decided to retire, so we got Kyle, who's our now drummer and our current drummer. And it was the first song that him and Steve Holt, our guitar player, wrote together. So they had sent me that right when they first started jamming together. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. Yeah. And it just kind of kicked around. So it was actually the last song we recorded, but the first song that was written. And it wasn't really sure we were going to put it on the album until we got with Stephanie Plate from Thera and asked her to do a little duet with me on it, and we had toured with Thera in Europe earlier. I guess that was 2011, but so just became even better friends with those guys. And I don't know if you're familiar with them; they're Alaskan kids as well. But anyway, just Stephanie kind of made it more than what it was when I was just doing it. So it was a special thing to have her on it. And anyway, it's kind of an interesting song. So your question, is there going to be stuff like that again on the album? I think so. There's a couple songs on the new album that have that sort of vibe, I think. But, you know, we're totally into like moody, dark, bluesy, heavy rock, you know? And so I think that, and to keep it melodic as well. So I think that's still the forefront of the band on this album as well as it was on the last one. So we knew that we didn't want to do anything like Collisions on Time. So not to say that we don't want to do anything like Time and Trauma on this one, but I think it'd probably be closer to this. And, you know, maybe I don't, there's certain songs of this that remind me of Snowcap Romance. And so I think it's kind of all over the board. You know, there's heavy songs and they're all heavy in their own right, but I wouldn't say metal so much. I mean, I think more of a moody rock song would be probably a better description, as just because I have somewhat tried to get back to singing more than screaming, just because, you know, that's what makes our band unique. I don't think screaming and nothing against screaming. I just don't think I'm that great of a screamer, to be honest. And I've always kind of had that feeling about it. And singing is what, you know, I love Layne Staley and Chris Cornell. And those are the dudes that I really grew up loving. And not that I can sound like them, but that's the vibe I got that I really tuned into as I got into bands. And so it's what makes our band unique. Love us or hate us. You know, people know that my voice is maybe not like others, and I think that's the gift and the curse of the band. I mean, I've said that before, but it's the truth. You know, it's not I don't think my voice is better than anybody's. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that it does make our band stand out a little bit when there's more singing involved with our music.
Okay. And that brings me to another thing, is your voice is extremely unique. I mean, that's one thing I noticed back in, I must have been middle school when I first heard I think it was Circle the Drain was the first song I heard off one of those demos. And I was like, what the hell? That's so weird. And then I listened to it again, and I was like, man, this is getting stuck in my head. And then it's one of those times, I mean, you don't hear a truly unique voice very often, and you definitely have that. And that's something. But the cool thing is, I haven't heard many people try to emulate that. You know, like the Daryl Palumbos and stuff, where it's a super, you know, identifiable vocal trait. And then there's 10 other bands that sound just like them, or, you know, that's one thing you've held on to, I think. And it's really cool to see, because I think it's toned down a bit now from the beginning as far as the vibrato, but it's still there. It's still Brock. Like, it's, you know, and it's a lot deeper. And, that was what was cool about Time and Trauma, just hearing the progression. And I was going to ask you about having such a unique voice. How has it done over time for you, as far as, is it harder to sing those older songs now, or has your voice just gotten stronger?
Oh boy. Man, you know, I don't think I've really struggled, with the older songs really. The vibrato thing, it's so weird, because, I think the original thought process on trying to form my own sound was that I loved Layne Staley's slow vibrato at the end of his words, but I couldn't really do that. But mine was faster, so that's how I kind of got into that, you know, trying to mimic my idol. And in turn, it turned into this weird thing. And I actually have a really funny memory of meeting one of my favorite guitar players at one time, which was Kerry King of Slayer. Oh, sure. And we were on tour with Chimera back in like 2001 or 2, and they were friends with Slayer. They had supported Slayer earlier that year, so we were in some town where Kerry King had come out to visit them, and I ended up meeting him, and he said, "Oh yeah, I caught you guys. You're the singer with the weird voice." And I was like, "Yeah, that was me." And I always was like, kind of wasn't sure if it was a compliment, and it probably wasn't, but I always kind of loved it. So I've always in my head always kept it as a compliment, but kind of a funny story. But Yeah, no, the old stuff. I think my voice has gotten stronger. I mean, I quit smoking cigarettes years ago, and I used to drink and smoke like every night, all night, and I would really, it would show. I did not have the legs night after night, and you know, touring, you do sometimes do have to play several shows in a row, and when I was smoking cigarettes a lot, it really did not. It didn't give me the stamina I needed. So when I quit doing that, for whatever reason, maybe it was mental too, but I just ended up getting, you know, a lot more legs out of my voice. And you kind of know, you know, you it's your instrument, you know, so you kind of know what you can and cannot do. And I've never been one of those guys that really warms up. I'm probably the worst person to like take any advice for like singing and stamina, because I still love to party and really enjoy the touring vibe. So I still do what I always did, minus the cigarettes. I like to have a few drinks before the show, not get drunk. I mean, we used to get blasted before and it really showed, and we never do that anymore. I mean, I wouldn't say we're much more professional now, but we are definitely more professional than we used to be. Thank God. And there's a reason for that. You know, people pay their hard earned money, and you can't be up there wasted and just giving them a half ass effort, you know? So we make sure that doesn't happen anymore. But, definitely, you know, I'm definitely more in tune to my voice. I know that, and luckily I've been able to have pretty good stamina. I just know that I'm not in the studio. You know, you have a chance to redo things. Live is live. And I've always, you know, some things aren't going to be perfect, and I never take it too seriously. But if you're having struggles with your voice, you definitely got to, you know, rest more and things of that nature. So, I mean, I think I'm a lot more in tune to my voice these days. So to answer your question, yeah, I think it is stronger. And I've done a lot more touring as the years get old, which is kind of weird. The older you get, the more touring we do. But I feel like it is pretty strong once we get going, at least a couple weeks in, and I'm feeling pretty good.
Okay. And you guys are you guys all back home in Alaska now?
Nope, just me.
Just you. Okay.
We moved to Seattle in 96. And then from there, we went to Portland, I think, by the next year. And those guys always stayed, and I came home in 2003, so I've been here ever since then.
Okay. I was going to ask how touring was, being in Alaska and having to fly down and start from there, but if you got home base down here already, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, those guys are in Portland. We got a little studio there, and you know, I just fly down, and you know, sometimes we have a chance to rehearse a week or so before a tour starts, and sometimes we don't. You know, it just depends on everybody's schedule. So, I mean, I try to make sure those guys do for sure. You know, they're jamming all the time. But I hate to say that I'm like the lead singer that doesn't show up until it's game time, but sometimes I am.
Typical.
Yeah, totally. Typical, they would totally be harping on me right now about it. But it's just the way life is. You know, like I said, I'm a father, and I have to make all the right decisions for my daughter when I'm home and be here as much as I can. So that's the main focus. And everybody understands that.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. How many guys have kids? Is it you and Steve, or?
No, just me and bass player Mick. He has actually two grown boys. And then he has a daughter, Dahlia, who is, I believe, a year older than my daughter. So she's 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And how much of your life so far has your daughter been a part of, as far as seeing like what dad does and the extent of it? Is she into it, or is she into other stuff,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, she's a big athlete. Like, you know, this is her third year playing hockey and third year of soccer. So she really likes those two. But music has always been a big deal for her. And she went to Germany with us one time, and she went to Australia with us one time. So she has been on stage with me a few times. And so she knows what it's all about. And we watch videos sometimes and things of that nature. But I am no longer her favorite band, I have been told. So we got knocked off the pedestal by the Pretty Reckless. And she loves girl rock bands, which she always has. So she really liked In This Moment and Hailstorm. And she's really a big fan of Pretty Reckless. And I'm not sure if you are familiar with them, but the singer for The Pretty Reckless, Taylor Momsen, was Cindy Lou Who of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, and that was one of her favorite movies.
Oh,
so when
shit,
she found that out, yeah. So Taylor's older now. Taylor is probably in her early 20s and has this pretty kick-ass bluesy rock band. She's kind of a Janis Joplin, Stevie Nicks kind of thing, but they're actually very cool. So yeah, that is that's Will. My daughter's name is Will, and she digs them pretty heavily.
That's awesome. I was gonna figure if she was younger, you know, being almost scared on stage, looking at what dad does, you know, or where you see your dad screaming at people, and I mean, I could see it going that way, but obviously not because.
Yeah, no, I knew she was my daughter when she was in my truck one time, and she was like, Dad, I don't want to hear any songs that don't have screaming in it. And so there was a time where she was into some pretty heavy stuff, which was pretty fun. But I think she's the older she gets, she's we went and saw Trolls last night actually, and there's a couple of Justin Timberlake songs in there, and she also takes dance as well. So they're playing all the kinds of the pop stuff as well. So she's well versed in all the music. She's a big music head.
That's awesome. That's cool. You guys can share that. Cause I mean, if you guys can, I mean, being especially a single dad, I mean, something to bond over that's stronger than a lot of things, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your life right there. I mean,
yep.
Together, I really your daughter it. And music. I mean, as long as they're welded together, that's amazing. And do you ever bring her to the radio station?
Yeah, she's been a couple times, and this just reminded me of something. We used to do, like, write a song before bed every night, just a little funny thing on my acoustic guitar, and she had written all these cool songs as she was growing up, but the coolest thing that I've always loved, she named her own band, which was my band, except I wasn't allowed to be in it, which was hilarious. It was everybody else in my band except for me. And I think I just became like the manager or something, but she named it and she's the lead singer and they're called the Twilight Stars. And I always thought that was pretty awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah. They got songs like the Crocodile Stomp and like all kinds of funny, like animal name jams. It was pretty hilarious.
That's awesome, dude. You should do it. Yeah. You should take some of those song titles and put them out somewhere to where she can see it on a record. Like,
totally.
What the fuck is this? 36 and the Twilight Stars? Holy shit.
Yes. Oh, man. It would be great. One of these days, I'll be watching her play, I'm sure, and it's going to be pretty cool.
That'll be awesome. And so you grew up in Alaska. Were you born in Alaska?
Yep. I was born in Anchorage.
Okay. See, I was born in Longview, Washington, 4 months old, moved to Alaska. So I've never been able to say I was born there. But that was, I mean, that's where I grew up. And so what part did you grow up in?
Sand Lake area. I was over, I went to Sand Lake Elementary and then Diamond High School. And, at one time, I think I was like the third or fourth biggest baby born at Providence. And my sister was the biggest baby born at Providence for many years. My little sister was 13 pounds.
Holy shit.
I was 11. And then I think like a 15 pounder knocked her off the old title there, but yeah, big babies, poor mom.
Yeah. Jesus.
But yeah, when my mom passed away a few years ago, but she would that's okay. She'd always hit me, you know, and be like, you did this to me. And it was always kind of like our funny little joke, but
yeah.
Yep, Anchorage is home, man. I was born here and hope to die here in an old age. And I just have a very, very deep connection to Alaska in general.
And how much of that bleeds through to what you do lyrically and musically? I mean, environment, I believe, has a huge influence on artistic output. And
yeah,
I mean, just the people are listening to this that haven't been to Alaska have no idea just the majesty of all of it. I'm just driving from Wasilla to Anchorage and the mountains are just huge. And I mean, the weather and the desolation a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in the beginning days, like the first couple of albums when we were really trying to get out there and make a name for ourselves, I think it was really a big part of it. These days, not as much because I think it's not that it's old hat, but there was specific things. Like when I was, you know, I commercial fished a lot of my life with my dad and Cook Inlet. And when the band got going, I wasn't able to do that anymore. And this summer, I did fish on my dad's boat again, and it was the first time in 17 years that I got to do that. So I wrote a couple songs for the new album out there, and I was so grateful to be able to do that out there because that's what I did growing up, and it was so cool to be much older and maybe more in tune to the beauty that is basically your daily office when you're out there in Cook Inlet and looking at, you know, Mount Readout right across the bay there. And just, it's just a beautiful place. So I think the last few albums, I didn't think about it as much as I was able to this summer, which was nice to get that connection again. And yeah, there's no question, man. This place is, I mean, I used to take it for granted, but as I got older, I really don't anymore. I know I live in God's country, you know. It's just one of the most beautiful places. And, you know, the Northwest too. I mean, Seattle and Portland and Washington, Oregon, just that whole Northwest area is very similar to here. Less mountains, but it's got the same vibe. And I think that's why we all, so many Alaskan musicians included, moved to the Northwest, you know, because it is home away from home. You know, you don't want to get too, some people are brave enough to move to New York City and just jump into some massive thing like LA or something. But, you know, if you're truly from small towns, you know, that's a big step. So, and I never really enjoy, I like visiting those places, but I'm not a big city guy. I mean, Anchorage is even too big for me. I'd like to move out to Girdwood if I get a chance. I'll move south or north, really, to be honest. But,
yeah,
you know, like I said, Anchorage, it's not a big city by any means, but it's got a big city, you know, vibrato to it sometimes. And I'd rather be in the woods, I think.
Yeah, that's one thing with you guys' style, too. I mean, Alaska is truly beautiful and but it can fuck you up. Like people don't realize that live down in the States. I mean, some states do, but Alaska, I mean, you're surrounded by things that'll fucking kill you, you know, at all
definitely,
times.
Definitely. You know, and it's a bit, there's not a tremendous amount of things for young people to do here as far as nightlife and seeing national touring bands coming through. I mean, it's better now than ever probably, but you know, so kids get caught up in like, you know, early alcoholism and drugs. And I'm not sure if it's worse than anywhere else, but I know we definitely have a problem with it. I mean, shoot, we have the most rapes in per capita in the country. That's awful.
Yeah.
Incest as well. You know, there's a lot of terrible things that go on in this state outside of the beauty of it that if you're not careful, you're right, man. It can totally mess you up. And that can happen anywhere, you know, but there is an alarming rate of you know, teen suicide here and just dark stuff here. So it all kind of comes into, you know, the music too. And I think it's decent. It's okay to reflect on those things as long as you can make sure that they're not, you know, destructive in your own lives. I think that's important here to be aware of the dangers here as young people.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, is that something that, when you guys got out of Alaska and you know, and jumped basically into the heavy music scene, I mean, you guys were exposed to a lot of things. Did you guys get involved with I mean, you guys drank, but did you guys get involved in drugs or any of that stuff? Or did you guys kind of have your heads on straight? And,
you know, for the most part, I think that our drug of choice was definitely alcohol, and it still is. But you know, I think we had little flirts with cocaine here and there, and but I don't think any, like, I was really surprised to hear that Anchorage has such a heroin problem. You know,
really?
I guess a really bad problem with it. And when I was a kid growing up, man, that I heard of it, but I would never attempt it. And it just seems like it's pretty ballsy. And unfortunately, I just recently had a great friend pass away from heroin up here. And it just kind of blew my mind that, you know, that it is such a, that's kind of what opened my eyes to it, actually, when my buddy passed away. Uh-huh. And then I was talking to another mutual friend who's an EMT, and he was just telling me about the alarming rate of heroin use and ODs and all that stuff. And I was just like, wow, man, when I was here as a young person, I don't remember seen or even hearing about kids doing it. So hopefully that gets curbed soon, because I know it is a problem here.
Yeah, and that's something, like, when I was there too, the hard stuff was never, I think, like, kids were bored. They'd get stoned, they'd drink, go to the bowling alley, do whatever. But the hard shit was never even around. It didn't seem like, I mean, people were dropping acid, I think, was the hardest it got in Conway High School area in Wasilla. And I mean, even with all the other things going on, you know, with where we were and the boredom and everything else, I never even heard of, I didn't know anyone that was on heroin or anything like that. And I think it's a lot of it is the painkillers that people are getting hooked on are too expensive.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The oxys and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. I've heard that same thing. So yeah. Yep. There's a lot of dangers out there, man. Kiddies, be careful.
Yeah. Shit, man. If I start a band.
Yeah,
start a band and not get on drugs from it.
Yeah, well, that's true, man. I mean, the band can be dangerous too, but at the same time, you know, sports and for me, I was an athlete growing up. Hockey was my life, so I played hockey my whole life, and you know, it kept me out of trouble, and so did music in some sense, as far as like not doing anything but just being non-constructive. I mean, getting in a band and creating and with your friends and being able to have opinions and allow others to have opinions on creation. And that's a massive, awesome learning process with that. Mm-hmm. And it does keep you out of trouble. I mean, it can also lead to trouble in this lifestyle. This is a difficult lifestyle and there's a lot of dark corners for it. But like I said, I mean, kids that are busy with things that are, you know, expanding their minds and things like that is a lot better than kids that are just idle.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that goes for adults too.
Sure.
Not just kids.
Well, you think...
I've been left to my own vices before and it's not pretty.
Well, you think all those people in Talkeetna, I mean, how many of those people are up here hiding from something, you know, or
horrible things there's they've always done, that. Or,
I mean, you can just go camping out there and
yeah.
Never
yeah,
come
you,
back.
You know, come up to Alaska. You can hide. That's our should be our slogan.
Harboring fugitives since
since
harboring inception. And creating fugitives since whatever, but
that's funny.
Well, you're coming up on your 22nd anniversary. I mean, the band is drinking age. That's a huge feat for one. And then how has it been these 22 years? I mean, everything you've done musically for the most part has been 36 Crazy Fists. So it's not like, oh man, when I was in that band, I'm so embarrassed of that record, or, you know, you've had to live and Matt Hopper, who I got in touch with you through, I asked him the same question is you've always been Matt Hopper. How do you, I mean, is there things you're not ashamed of really, but how have you dealt with being that persona for so long and having to own everything going forward? If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I've been real lucky to get to do what I've done. And I think for the most part, I tried to be a good person, especially to people that were interested in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've always been, as far as like the tours I've been on, you know, we're always the most approachable band. You know, we were usually the smaller band on those bills, but we've always had that kind of that vibe where there's no reason to charge our fans for a meet and greet. Nothing against bands that do it, because that's a great revenue stream now.
Mm-hmm.
But we always felt weird about it. And I was at management last album cycle. Was like, okay, let's start doing on the headliners. Let's do these VIP packages where they do this meet and greet. And I was just like, nah. Because you know why? The reason why is because I'm in the bar before the show sometimes. Yeah. I'm definitely in it afterwards. So why charge a fan an extra? The only thing, I'm like I said, I'm not dissing anybody that does it, because it is cool for certain bands to do it.
Sure.
Because they are getting to see the band that they love. They're getting a free T-shirt that maybe not everyone else can buy at the merch booth. I get the whole thing about it. But for us, coming from where we come from, you know, our friends would have kicked our ass if we ever acted like we were better than anybody else growing up. And that's the way it is in Alaska. You know, there's mm-hmm. nobody that's bigger than anybody just because they got a little limelight, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that attitude. There's no flash. And I have always steered clear from people that are, you know, the whole rock star thing. I mean, I just don't gel with those kind of guys. I'm a normal dude. I wear, you know, Levi's and T-shirts and flannels and a beanie hat every day, and I've always done that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, let's be honest. I did have some little spiky twists in the '90s. I had some long hair before that, but you know what I mean. I'm just kind of a no flash dude, and our band is like that. And I think that I've always been able to keep that in check. And you know, I'm sure there's people that think I'm a jerk, but for the most part, I have a lot of friends, and my friends that I've had since I was a kid are still my friends, and I think that I've kind of tried to leave that mark that I'm a pretty approachable person that is at least going to be handshakes first, and then you can think about me otherwise afterwards.
Sure, sure. And I mean, and you've been, I mean, you've been Brock from 36 for 22 years now almost. I mean, does that, does that, I mean, carry anything with you to where, I mean, do you even think about it anymore, or is it something that you, you carry with, you know, I'm sure you have a good sense of pride with what you've accomplished, but is it something you're thinking about when you meet people and in your interactions daily?
Oh, I get real shy when somebody's like, "Oh, this is Brock from so and so."
Oh, okay.
From 36. I'm like, "Ah, you don't have to say that." You know, for whatever reason, it's always bothered me. And then people are like, "Oh, it's usually a nice thing for someone to, if they're interested or whatever." But I, it always kind of like, I wish they wouldn't say that sometimes.
Sure.
So I don't know what that, I'm not comfortable with it. I never have been. But I used to be real worried about, like, okay, when the band's done, if the band breaks up someday, what, who am I? What do I do? And I used to really think about that a lot. And that was, you know, a good 10 years ago at least or whatever. And now, I mean, if the band had to disband for whatever reasons, you know, I am very proud of what the band has done. The guys in the band are my favorite people on the planet, and we've been friends for so long that, you know, I don't worry about life beyond it anymore. I don't know what else I would do entirely with music, but I would still hope to continue to play music, not on a touring level, but I would be pretty shocked if I ever went on to another band that was trying to tour like 36 does, because it's just a grind.
Yeah.
But but no, I don't think about it anymore. Now I'm very comfortable and proud of our career, but I would easily, you know, relax and do something that wasn't so, people are always asking me, "Hey, why don't you get in front, or, you know, can you do this little, can you speak to these kids?" Or, and I've done them, but I'm never comfortable with it. And, they're always like, "What, you get in front of thousands of people and sing?" I'm like, "Dude, that's with the band and electricity. And, you know, there's a different vibe with it." 'Cause I went and talked to a group of seventh graders at Golden View Middle School about goals. And I was kind of thinking about getting into motivational speaking. And boy, man, I realized pretty quick that I was not really that interested in that. You got like, you know, 37th grade eyes on you. And they're just like waiting for you to say something magnificent. I kind of gave my initial story, and I was so glad that the teacher opened it up for questions to me, because I was like done with my spiel in about 30 seconds, and they're like, "Really, is that it, dude? Who is this guy?" And it was pretty comical, actually. But yeah, so that kind of derailed my motivational speaking career pretty quick.
Oh, just took some seventh graders, that's it.
Well, you know, I love kids, and I love talking to kids, and I love talking about reaching goals and doing positive things in your life. So I would definitely be interested in doing that.
Yeah.
But I just, I think I gotta get a little more comfortable with the approach. And because I did enjoy, once the questions did get opened up, I loved it. I loved talking with the kids. And I also did it at Charter North Hospital here, which was a total eye opener, because there was a lot of kids from the Villages who were telling me just awful things about how they get high on kitchen supplies. And wow, that was an eye opening experience for me. And but I loved it, and I loved, and I think towards the end there was even a couple kids that were like sort of like, you know, the more metal kids, but maybe I wasn't metal enough for them, and they kind of were judging me, and I could tell. And then by the end of it, we were like talking about, you know, who knows who we were talking about, you know, maybe we found common ground on early Bay Area thrash or something, I don't know. But I don't remember specifically, but I remember in the end, these guys were like, "Okay, this guy's okay. He's not what I thought or whatever." And I love that. So
yeah,
maybe there's a career for me at after music in that or something. 'Cause I would enjoy doing something like that.
Sure. And that's something you could do a lot of there in the Villages and everything else. And people bring you in to do that. I mean, what was, if you can remember, what was like a question you were maybe surprised by or stuck with you that they asked, if you can remember?
You know, it wasn't really questions to me in that one specifically. That one was, we were talking about how they were telling us their experiences with their friends who had passed away from, like, you know, it was like not huffing gas, but like doing some kind of chemicals, you know? So we were talking about what they learned from those things. And there was an actual teacher that was running the whole thing. And I was just basically listening. And then they had questions for me about music, just basically touring. So, like some of them were really into music. And so, and some of them were totally, you know, closed off and weren't asking at all. There was maybe six kids out of 30 that even asked me a question at the hospital. So that was interesting. And that was a few years ago. And I don't know if you know Eric Cross. He drums for Delmag.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I do.
He's one of my best friends. We've known him, each other since sixth grade. And he was the teacher there. So that's how I got involved in that in the first place.
Delmag, man. That takes me back.
Yeah, those guys just played here at – we have a new, really cool new – venue downtown called the Willowaw, and they just had a show there the other night there, and it was killer.
Interesting. Okay, I'm glad to see some venues are opening up. I mean, I remember gigs; that was my big thing, and before that got torn down, but
long gone.
Yeah,
long
gone. Those were some good days, man. And what is that other bar up there that's been doing shows? They filmed the stage too. I've watched a couple YouTube videos of bands playing there. It's I don't remember the name of it.
Not Coots.
Not Coots. No, it's another bar. But they basically, there's a camera on the stage, like filming the stage, and I think they film everyone, and then you can, you know, take the video and do what you want with it. But I don't remember.
Oh, weird. It could be the Hard Rock downtown now. Maybe.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I actually saw Portugal the Man played the opening ceremony thing there, and I went and checked that out.
Oh, nice. Yeah, those are my boys. Did you know, well, I guess we're all from the Valley, but have you probably met Zach and John?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A couple times. Yep. Probably run into each other everywhere, but
we all did. So for that opening ceremony for Hard Rock, Zach and John and myself were part of the guitar smashing, and they don't cut a ribbon for that. Hard Rock always smashes guitars, so us three got to do that, and that was pretty fun. But nice. I went and saw those guys not too long ago at Gleason Fest in Spokane end of the summer. So yeah, I keep in touch with Zach off and on every once in a while, and I say hi to John when I see him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Zach was the one I was mentioning my idea for starting the podcast, and he's going to be on too. And we were at John's house, and he's like, I was kind of listing off people I was going to start out with. And he's like, man, these are all Alaska people. You should talk to Brock. And I was like, yeah, that'd be interesting. We've never actually really talked before. So that was always on my radar. And I mentioned it to Matt Hopper. He's like, oh, I got his number. I'll give it to you. I was like, oh, sweet. Okay.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, no, I love Zach. He's such a sweet guy. Make sure you say hi for me if you do talk to him. And of course, Hop Boy, that's my old buddy, and I'm so happy for him. He's got so much cool stuff happening. Talk about a grinder, man. That guy's grinding. And it's very, very, very cool to see that people are picking up his songs and putting some light on them that maybe he wasn't able to do yet. So I think it shows a whole new path for Matt, and rightfully so. He deserves it.
Absolutely. He did a podcast episode with me too. It went 2.5 hours, and we went through everything.
I've had some drinking sessions with Matt to go like that, so I can only imagine. Yeah, he's a good dude. Really like him, and he's worked hard for what he's gotten.
Absolutely, dude. I wanted to talk briefly label wise. You guys, we knew a couple Roadrunner bands, and we've heard a lot of things about Roadrunner. You guys started out on Roadrunner, and then went to Carl at Ferret, right?
Yeah, well, we went to DRT before Ferret, but DRT, DRT folded like almost the second we went there.
Oh, shit.
So, but they did put out our album. That was kind of a weird year because we asked to be let go from Roadrunner because things were just not gelling after the second record with them. But we wanted to stay on Europe or worldwide Roadrunner, just wanted to get off in the States. Because they had this crazy delayed idea of releasing our album in the rest of the world at a certain time, and then like a year later releasing it in the States, which is
what?
Yeah, it just seemed crazy. So we were like, nope, we're out of here. We got to go. So they graciously let us go, and we loved the people that we worked with at Roadrunner. There was a time where we were fairly bitter because we thought they could have worked harder and maybe not everybody was into the band. And that's a true statement. I mean, I know there was people that weren't totally 100% behind the music. So that happens. And when that does happen, you're not in a good spot. So when we left DRT, we didn't even get to really meet them, but they put the album out immediately. So we were grateful for that.
Uh-huh.
And we went there because they had like some great bands. I mean, Clutch was on there for a minute when we were on there.
Okay.
And so, and we were like, oh, if Clutch is on there, it can't be too bad. So we we stuck around on that until it folded, and then we went over, and Carl was our old friend. Carl sang on our first record. Carl, and then we toured with Nora in the very early days as well. So going to Ferret was awesome because we loved a lot of the bands on Ferret.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun for two albums, and then he sold it to Warner, and basically they did away with Warner, I mean Ferret. So,
uh-huh.
So then, let's see, that was kind of when we went back to Roadrunner Worldwide, and then we stayed with Ferret for that. To be honest, I can't remember if we were on Ferret when the Warner deal went through or if we were in between albums and we didn't really need a label at that moment. So that might've been between the Collisions and Time and Trauma records.
Okay.
Which I think it was, I'm pretty positive that's what happened. So, sometimes you become a suitcase and it's hard to remember all this stuff. But
yeah, dude.
The president of Roadrunner became the president of Spine Farm Universal, and that's how we found out about Spine Farm. Oh, and also our marketing guy, Tim Brennan,
uh-huh.
was also our marketing guy at Ferret. So we had these relationships with them. we were thinking we were going to go to Nuclear Blast because that's where our old A&R guy, Monty Connor, went. And then the head of Roadrunner Europe, Mark Palmer, was the head of Nuclear Blast. So we were thinking we were going to go there, and then the Spine Farm deal came around, and it just seemed like they were the hungriest of all the labels that we were talking to. We spoke to maybe five or six different ones, and we actually also flirted with not doing a label at all and putting it out ourselves, just on a digital thing. But once we really weighed that all in and we got new management, we realized that, if you still want to tour and be invited to all the major festivals around the world, you need that, because those labels sponsor those things.
Yep.
If you don't have that, they might have an upcoming new band that's the new hot thing, and they're sponsoring the festival. Well, guess who's getting bumped? The
exactly.
band that doesn't have that. So
yeah.
we decided not to do that, and we really started considering the options. And Spine Farm, they've been amazing. I mean, we did the most U.S. touring for sure, and the most backing by any label has been through Universal. And, obviously Universal is massive. They have the deepest pockets. But
sure.
Spine Farm has just been killer. And our new A&R guy, Darren DeLicio, we just love him so much. He's just such an eager dude, and he's just fired up about things all the time. And he's actually a lot of fun to be around. He's a young guy. He's I don't know how old Darren is. Darren's probably – I'd be shocked if he's over 30.
Okay.
So he's got a cool job. And So he's either late 20s, early 30s, one of those two. And I really do like him. And I think that the Spine Farm people, everybody that's there now, I mean, if you look at their roster, I mean, outside of the U.S., they have massive bands. I mean, they have Korn, they got Five Finger, they got Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a lot of big rock bands. So it's a good place to be, and I think everybody there is very tuned in to what if you need to be in the magazine, they'll get you in it, and blah blah blah. So,
sure.
At this late day of our career, we're happy to be in a place like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, you need a home out there, especially with what you guys are doing, like you said, with those festivals and everything. Because I mean, a lot of bands are self-releasing now, but a lot of bands aren't doing huge festival circuits and things like that. They're self-releasing and are not doing a lot of print ads or print ads at all.
And that's the other thing. I mean, that's, if you try to do all that stuff on your own, just look into it. I mean, your brain will shut off immediately.
Yeah.
You're like, no, maybe not. I don't know what we're doing. That's why labels have all those departments, for people that are so versed in that stuff. And yeah, we're happy to be at Spine Farm. That being said.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Brock, do you guys have any tours lined up for 2017 yet? Or are you guys just focusing on the record at this point?
Yeah, no, that's all getting that's all being, you know, kind of prepared right now. Where our album will come out right around next summer, which will be the start of the European festivals in June. And that's probably where we will kick off our cycle. And that's, so that's all getting nailed down just recently, the last few weeks, once everybody kind of figured out the timelines of everything. So yeah, we won't, nothing yet, but I mean, like I said, we went to South America a couple weeks ago, which was awesome. Brazil for our first time, the people were just incredible there. Yeah, nothing until summer probably. So finish the album and then get the artwork rolling and all that stuff and photo shoots and videos and all the stuff that happens every cycle, you know.
Put it in the machine.
Yeah, exactly. Put it on tumble dry and get it going.
Exactly. Throw in a cinder block in a dryer and let it roll.
Yep.
Well, awesome, Brock. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show, man, and being into it you know, I had a great time chatting with you and catching up on old times, even though they were separate.
Yeah, no, likewise, man. I enjoyed talking music with you. It was fun, man. I wish you the best, and I appreciate you asking for me to come on.
Awesome. Thanks, Brock. All right, well, there you have it, guys. That's my interview with Brock Lindau from 36 Crazy Fists. Had a great time chatting with Brock. Good to reconnect and bring you guys some good content. So we did talk a lot about Stephanie Plate guesting on the album and the song Marrow. So right now I'm going to play that song for you. We're going to listen to Marrow off Time and Trauma.
Slowly we
All right, guys, thanks for sticking around with me to the end of the episode. We had a great time this week. All month of December, we're going to have Alaskans on the show. We started out with John Gourley. We had Brock from 36 Crazy Fists, and we got a few more for you coming up to round out the end of the year. So please stay tuned. We are on purepleasurepodcast.com. We are on Instagram and Twitter. We're also on jabberjawmedia.com. And if you want to listen to us there, we're on SoundCloud and iTunes. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks for listening.